Hello and welcome to Light the Way with Dr. Colin Monger. He's the senior pastor of Shepherd of the Hills Church. At Light the Way, we believe the most powerful tool we possess when sharing our faith with others is the Word of God. It was the Apostle Paul that said, "Faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the Word of Christ." So as we open the Word together, it's our prayer that you'll not only receive what God has for you, but share what you learn with those you come in contact with. And now, here's Pastor Colin.
In the book of Job, if you want to join me there, Job chapter 1. And if you're not familiar with where Job is, if you go to Psalms, it's the book before Psalms. So that's where we are. In Job chapter 1, as we continue in this sort of mini-series that we're doing on thankfulness, as it's November and Thanksgiving is coming up, and I hope you're ready. But we're in Job chapter 1. Well, as I said, I want to talk about thankfulness this morning. Specifically, thankfulness in hardship. During the colonial times, there was a man named George Whitefield. He was a preacher during what's called the Enlightenment time or Enlightenment period or the Great Awakening or whatever you've heard it referred to. But it was this time when the preachers would go up and down the colonies and they would preach to everyone. They would go to every town and they would go into every public square and they would preach everywhere they could. Well, George Whitefield was one of those. And he would make frequent trips from the colonies to England and back, and he would keep a journal. And he was famous for always writing in his journal, whenever something bad would happen, that it pleased God. He would say it pleased God to send a storm. It pleased God to give us adversity. It pleased God to send the pirates. It pleased God to delay our journey. And it was always something that he looked at as it pleased God. Well, on one particular trip across the Atlantic, they came across a storm that was so bad, it threatened to break up the ship. They survived it, and in the very immediate aftermath of that storm, as they were still trying to repair their vessel, George Whitefield looks up and sees a rainbow. And he stops, and he gets everyone's attention, and he says, "Look at the rainbow and him who made it. Look at the peace of God that comes upon all who come to Jesus for salvation." Even in the midst of incredible hardship, he was looking for something to be thankful for. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, it says, "Give thanks in all circumstances." And that's what I want to talk about today, being thankful during hardship, having an attitude of gratitude despite the circumstance. It's easy to be thankful when things go well, when the bills are paid and when we have everything that we need and want, when all of our desires are satisfied. It's easy to be thankful when we have our favorite dinner. You should see at our home, every night we have dinner, we have the kids pray. And there was one night in particular, they didn't like at all what we had to eat. And so they left the table hungry because we're those kind of parents that you can eat what we've given you, but we're not going to go back and remake other things. And so they were kind of picked at it, but then they walked away from it. And the next night they sat down, and I'll never forget the prayer that came out of our oldest daughter. She says, "Dear Lord, thank you for this food, and please let dinner be good." That is their prayer every night. Please let dinner be good. Well, you should hear their prayers on spaghetti night and taco night and pizza night. "Oh, Lord, thank you so much for the tacos and the spaghetti." And they're so excited because it's what they wanted. It's easy to be thankful when the boss says, "Good job," when things go well in life, when the doctor's checkup went well. But what about the other times? What about when you walk out of your home and your tire is flat and now you have to deal with that, or the battery's gone dead, or the alarm didn't go off and now you're late, or you run out of hot water in the shower? What about when the money doesn't look like it'll go far enough and you don't know who to pay, whether to buy groceries or pay the rent or the mortgage? What about when the doctor calls with bad news because the checkup didn't go as planned? What happens when a loved one dies? I've spoken with a number of farmers in my ministry, and I have heard several times stories from farmers that go something like, they had a great year. It was a great spring, a great summer. They had everything they needed, just the right amount of rain. It was going to be a bumper crop. Everything sprouted. They couldn't have asked for more. And then they come to the very end, and maybe a week before harvest, a storm hits and destroys their entire farm. What happens when we lose everything? What happens when we lose our job or our home is foreclosed on? What about then? Paul says in Ephesians chapter 5 to give thanks always and for everything. And yet, admittedly, that is hard to do at times. In the book of Job, we see a man who has done and is doing everything right. He's kind to others. He manages his money well. He gives generously. He loves the Lord with all his heart. He's faithful to his wife. He's a good father to his children. He's training them to fear the Lord. He is a righteous man. And yet, in spite of all of that, he loses everything. And despite trying to figure out why, it doesn't seem that there are any answers as to why he's losing everything and why he's suffering the way he is, because he has lived a righteous life. And yet through this, we see that Job remains thankful and grateful, and that attitude of gratitude shines through. But before we can appreciate his reaction to hardship, we have to first understand the hardship, the affliction, and listen to what Job went through and consider it and think if any of it sounds at all like stuff in your life. It begins in Job 1, verse 1. There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job. And that man was blameless and upright, one who feared God and turned away from evil. Down in verse 5, it says that Job would send and consecrate them, and he would rise early in the morning and offer burnt offerings according to the number of his children. For he said that it may be, my children have sinned and cursed God in their hearts. Thus Job did continuously. In verse 8, it says, and the Lord said, have you considered my servant Job, that there is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man who fears God and turns away from evil? Then Satan answered the Lord and said, does Job fear God for no reason? Have you not put a hedge around him and his house and all that he has on every side? You've blessed the work of his hands, and his possessions have increased in the land. But stretch out your hand and touch all that he has, and he'll curse you to your face. Job is an afflicted man. And first of all, we notice he's afflicted spiritually. He's persecuted because of his relationship with God. In Matthew chapter 5, Jesus tells us, blessed are you when you're persecuted for righteousness' sake and when you're persecuted for his name's sake. And Job is living it out. It's because he has been righteous to God that he has attracted the attention of the enemy. Do you ever think in your life like you're doing everything right and you can't win? You're the only one being responsible. You're the only one following the rules. You're the only one doing it the way you should. And yet, at every turn, it seems that you're punished. Job did. He's not suffering because of what he did wrong. He's suffering because of what he did right. And more importantly, what he did righteously. And that's just the point. When you make yourself a friend of God, you will, in the same motion, make yourself an enemy of the ruler of this world. And the more you have faith, and the more faith you live, and the more people see that faith that you live, and the more Jesus shines through your deeds in life, and the more people look at you and look at how you've been transformed and look at how you don't fear anything because God is on your side, and the more people see Jesus in your actions, the more of a threat you will become to the enemy of faith. People will look at you and they'll actually see hardship in your life, and they'll assume it must be because of bad decisions, that you must be a sinner. You must be a wicked person. And sometimes hardship does come because we've made bad decisions, but it's also true that hardship comes because we're obedient. You remember the story of the disciples in the boat on the Sea of Galilee, and how the storm came and it threatened to sink that boat. And these were rugged fishermen. They knew this sea. They knew the storms. They knew how to navigate a boat in the midst of great wind. And yet they were afraid. And they thought they were about to die. And you read that story and then it occurs to you, they're not there because they did anything wrong. They're there because Jesus said, get in the boat and go. And they did. They were obedient. They even argued with him about it at first. And yet they got in and they went and they obeyed. And they found themselves in the midst of the greatest storm they had ever seen. And yet there are people who would look at that very scene and they would assume those men were being punished for something they did wrong. Job's friends assumed that of him, that certainly he must be punished for sin. In chapter 4, his friend Eliphaz says, "Remember who was innocent who perished? Were the upright cut off? All I have seen, those who plow iniquity and sow trouble reap the same," he tells him. And then later in chapter 11, another friend, Zophar, says, "Know that God exacts of you less than your guilt deserves, Job. You should be grateful. This is all that's happened." His other friend in chapter 18, Bildad, tells him, "Indeed, the light of the wicked is put out, and the flame of his fire does not shine." His friends look at him and say, "Job, you must be a wicked, guilty, sinning man because of all that has come upon you." They thought he was facing hardship because he'd sinned. And yet we see here in verse 8, he's facing hardship not because he sinned, but because he was blameless. He was upright. He feared God and he rejected evil in his life. And so he's afflicted spiritually. Second, he's afflicted practically. Notice it says in chapter 1, verse 12, "And the Lord said to Satan, behold, all that he has is in your hand, only against him do not stretch out your hand." You can mess with his stuff, but don't touch his life. And so Satan goes to work. Verse 13, "There was a day when his sons and daughters were eating and drinking in their oldest brother's house. And there came a messenger, and Job said, the oxen were plowing and the donkeys feeding beside them. And the Sabaeans fell upon them and took and struck down the servants with the edge of the sword." In verse 16, it says, "The fire of God fell from heaven and burned up the sheep and the servants consumed them." In verse 17, "The Chaldeans formed three groups and made a raid on the camels and took them and struck down the servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone have escaped to tell you." Verse 18, "The sons and daughters were eating, and the whole house collapses." Job is facing hardship in life, practically. You know, people have this idea that spiritual warfare stays spiritual. But the truth is, it spills out into the physical. In other words, your spiritual faith will cost you in the physical world. You remember the story of Daniel and how his faith led him to pray to God, even though it had been outlawed. And because of that, he was thrown into a lion's den. It may be that you have dealt with lion's dens in your life. Maybe you have a work schedule that used to go very well, and then someone found out you go to church, and all of a sudden, for some reason, you work every Sunday morning. Maybe you've been in a group of people who find out your faith and they pressure you to do something that you can't simply because you can't. Our founding fathers knew all about that when they founded the nation and wrote the Declaration of Independence. They said at the very end, "We pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor." They knew that what they were doing in spirit would have a physical consequence. And likewise, your faith will have a physical consequence. It may cost you practically, as it has Job. He's lost his property, his family, his health, his home. Every measure of success has been touched by the enemy. Third, he's afflicted relationally. In chapter 2, verse 9, notice what it says. "His wife said to him, do you still hold fast your integrity? Curse God and die." Later on in the book, we read that his friends, his counselors come to him, as we just read a little bit of it, and they believe he's guilty. They're people that he's looking to for some encouragement, and they assume that he's done something very bad, as his wife does here, as his friends do later, and he sees one by one these relationships failing. In our culture, in our law, and in the law of God of the Old Testament, by the way, the accused party is innocent until proven guilty. And yet, how often do we see a story on the news and someone's been arrested for some heinous crime, and out come the friends and out come the public and out come the family even sometimes saying, "Well, I just can't believe they were capable of that. Oh, look in their eyes. You know they're guilty. I can't believe I lived next to that person this whole time and I never knew that's what they were doing." And they've assumed that this individual is guilty before a trial has proven it. And maybe you've dealt with that. Something's gone wrong in your life. Maybe you lost your job. Maybe you have some financial problems. Maybe you have a child who's gone prodigal. Maybe you found yourself in trouble in some way, and people that you thought were your friends come out and they throw you under the bus. And they say, well, it must be that you did something awful to have all of this happen. And the relationships start to break down. And so Job is afflicted spiritually and practically and relationally. And fourth, he's afflicted psychologically. Notice it says in chapter 1, verse 22, in all of this, Job did not sin or charge God with wrong. And then in chapter 2, verse 10, in all this, Job did not sin with his lips. I have always appreciated the transition there because it gives us an insight into the psychological misery going on in Job's life. As things progress and they go from bad to worse, and he goes from losing everything to losing his health, and no matter what he does, nothing helps. He goes from just simply not blaming God to biting his tongue. He's done everything right. And so how could a loving God allow all of this to happen? It's a valid question. It's a question a lot of people today deal with. How could a loving God allow for coronavirus or allow for war and famine and children to be killed in schools? And how could a loving God allow for something like abortion and water to be scarce in areas where they need it the most, and disease and international issues and economic issues? And how could a loving God allow all of this? And so Job is dealing with that. And so he's dealing with psychological issues, practical issues, relational issues. He's dealing with spiritual issues. That's his affliction. But notice what he says. In all this, Job did not sin or charge God with wrong. And then down in chapter 2, he did not sin with his lips. In spite of having every reason to be angry, having lost everything, for no reason at all, it seems, Job remains positive. He remains thankful, as we'll see here in a minute. That's his reaction. And yet how? How would a man going through all of that remain thankful in his heart? Well, first of all, he has the right perspective. Notice in verse 21 of chapter 1. He says to his wife, naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I shall return. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. How you respond and ultimately overcome hardship in life starts with having a right perspective of the situation and of life in general. In Ecclesiastes chapter 3, it says, for everything there is a season and a time for every matter under heaven. And how yet how often do we expect things to last forever? We expect life to never change. We expect our luck to never run out, as they say. And then we're surprised when it does. You remember the story of Jonah and how God called him to go preach against Nineveh. And of course he doesn't. He gets on a boat, and then a great fish swallows him up and brings him back. And he has a change of heart, right? And he goes to Nineveh and he preaches and they repent, and he gets mad. He didn't want them to repent because he didn't want them to be forgiven. He was looking for the firework display and it didn't come. And so he goes out onto a hillside and he climbs up there and he wallows in his misery. And it tells us that God gives him a plant, and it comes in one night and it goes in another. And Jonah was angry because the plant left. And God asked him, why are you angry? You didn't plant it. You didn't cause it to grow. It came one day and it went another. He had the wrong perspective. He thought it should last indefinitely. In James chapter 4, it even tells us that life is a mist, that it's here one moment and it's gone the next. Jesus talks about grass in the field and flowers being beautiful one day and thrown into the oven the next. And the point is that in this world, life and experience and fashions and trends, none of it lasts forever. There's always a season to everything. There's a story of a king who was looking for great advice from one of his wise advisors. And he said, I want a proverb. I want something that I can remember, something that will always be true no matter what's going on. And so they went and they thought about it and they came back with this phrase, this too will pass. There is a season to everything. And so that perspective should create within the individual an attitude of thankfulness and of urgency to get the most out of the present, because you know the season will move. One day you will have, as a parent, your last diaper change. Maybe you're waiting for that. We are. eagerly, but that season will pass. You will have a last bedtime story. You will have a last piggyback ride up to bed. There'll be a last report card, a last parent-teacher conference, a last ball game, a last day of high school. There will be a last day in college, a last day at work when you finally enter the workforce. There will be a last time when the whole family is around the table for Thanksgiving. There will be a last day when Christmas is what it was as a child. Life is full of seasons and transitions. And it's true that things come and things go, but it's also true that as the Lord gives and takes, He also gives and takes hardship. And that means that every storm will pass. There's a season for everything. It won't last forever. Difficulty isn't indefinite. And yet, because it won't last forever, we should be eager to look at it and glean and learn what we can and how we can grow and how we can take this opportunity and seize it. We can't control what happens to us. We can't stop the seasons from changing. We can't stop the affliction from coming. We can't avoid every ounce of difficulty in life, but you can control how you respond. And so it starts with having the right perspective. And so Job has that perspective. He says, "The Lord gave and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." Second, Job becomes reflective. In other words, he starts to objectively consider his situation. Notice it says in chapter 2, verse 10, "Shall we receive good from God, and shall we not receive evil?" You know, the evil there in the Hebrew is the word ra, and it means adversity, it means hardship. It's not evil in the sense of sin and wickedness that we would think of, but rather evil as in the sense of difficulty in life. And so as Job sits and he looks at his life in shambles, and he considers everything that's led him from the past to the present, and how it's all developed, and how everything was going fine until one day he got the news that stuff had been lost. Servants had been killed. Property had been damaged. And then more news and more news. And the snowball grew bigger and bigger, and it was an avalanche. And he sits there and he considers it. He realizes something that most people struggle with. You've got to take the good with the bad. Life is filled with contrast. Ease accompanies hardship. Light goes with dark. Highs come with lows. Success is on the heels of failure. And so Job says, should we not receive good and not difficulty? In Lamentations chapter 3, it says, "Is not from the same mouth of the Most High both good and bad that come?" It's hard to appreciate the blessing without enduring the burden. And yet there are people in life who would try. They would honestly believe that life should be perpetually easy. That God, if there is a God, they say, exists to make their life nothing but sunshine and rainbows. Forgetting that a rainbow often comes on the heels of a storm. But you know, I've noticed about people like that who never face struggle. They never have hardship in life. They never have difficulty. They're never offended or put in an adverse situation. You know, I have observed that by and large, they have a skewed view of the world. They can't take one bit of criticism, which doesn't help with their job when they have to talk to a boss. They don't do well in relationships. They tend to not be very good friends. Everything is always about making their life easy. And if it isn't making their life easy, they're not really interested in it. And so they can't cope when hardship comes. And it will come. Jesus told us it will come. It says, "In the world you will have tribulation." So there's no doubt that it will come. And yet, when a person who has never struggled endures or encounters hardship, they can't endure. They can't succeed and they can't overcome. Because you learn more from hardship than ease. You learn more from failure than success. And if you've never had to face difficulty, how can you appreciate the victory? When I was a cop, I wanted to be a mountain bike cop. And where we were, we had a lot of terrain. And so we had these bikes, and in order to be a mountain bike cop, you had to go through this course called IPIMBA. It was the International Police Mountain Bike Association. It was a course that was several weeks, maybe even a month or two long. I can't exactly remember. But you learned all of these techniques and all of these protocols and these ways to arrest people from your bike and how to go upstairs and downstairs and all this other stuff. But then because of where we were in Albuquerque in the valley location, we had to do a sort of crucible at the very end. We rode from our position 10 miles up the valley to the foothills of the mountain. And then it started. We got on our bikes again and we rode 10 more miles up the mountain. We went from 5,000 to 10,000 feet in elevation from the foothills to the peak, going back and forth and around and up the trails and all the way, stopping everywhere we could to do some kind of exercise or movement or training. And then we would get going. We would keep going. I got to the top of that mountain and I felt the fibers of my legs coming apart. I mean, it was a fire that I had never felt before. There were tears coming down your eyes. And then the instructor is going one more mile. And you don't know how you're going to do it. I remember I couldn't walk for like 2 weeks. But when I got that pin, oh, how sweet that was. Don't be so quick to run from hardship in life. Don't be so quick to numb yourself. It's often the hardship that makes you and shapes you. It isn't that God is mad at you. It's that he's building you into something. He's molding you into something. And Job recognizes that. He said, should we not receive good without evil? Don't both of them go together? Isn't God doing something here? And so he becomes reflective. Finally, and we'll close with this, he stays proactive. Sometimes in hardship, you have to be proactive about things. And you have to look for the positive in unlikely sources. Notice what it says in chapter 2, verse 8. It says, he took a piece of broken pottery with which to scrape himself while he sat in the ashes. You know, Job is a righteous man. He's done everything right. We've established that. Even God says there's none like him on the earth, blameless and upright. And yet, for no apparent reason, he has lost everything. He's sitting there and it doesn't make sense. He's done everything he should and yet it's all fallen apart. All of his property and his children and his family and his friends and his relationship. His wife isn't helping him. She's kind of abandoned him. And now, apparently, he's sitting in a pile of ashes, contemplating his life, wondering about every choice he's made along the way. If anyone ever in history had a claim to have a little bit of self-pity, it would be Job. And yet he doesn't. It says here in verse 8 that he picks up a piece of broken pottery and he scrapes his wounds. He stays proactive. He finds a piece of broken glass. And he scrapes the blisters for just a little bit of relief from the pain. Sometimes you have to look for something to be thankful for. And it will come in an unlikely place. You will have to proactively search for it. In Psalm chapter 9, it says, I will give thanks to the Lord with my whole heart. I will be glad. I will sing praise to your name. And then he goes on to talk about the enemies he's dealing with in life. You may have a terrible job, but if you're determined, there will be something to be thankful about. It could be that your job gives you insurance, or it could be that it pays the bills well, or maybe just that you have it when so many others do not. You might have a rotten boss, but you're thankful you don't have to go home with him. At 5 o'clock, you can say, sayonara, I'll see you tomorrow. Your plans might not go the way you expect, but if you try and you're determined, there is something to be thankful for. I remember when I was first dating my then-to-be wife, and I was at the stage, I was still trying to impress her. You know that stage. Long gone, but I was still trying to impress her. And so I had taken out a reservation. We were in Albuquerque, and there's that mountain I keep talking about. And at the top of it was this restaurant called High Finance, for a reason. And it was just that. It's like, you know, you want to eat dinner here. Here's the mortgage and the first child. And I mean, you went there like for special things. And I made a reservation hoping we would just eat like salad and get out of there. But we had our reservation. We had our time. And I was going to pick her up. And then it started to rain. In Albuquerque, we got 30 days of rain a year. And of course, that would be one of them. And so I'm running late, and I'm trying to get there, and I'm frustrated, and now we are late, and we've missed our reservation. We get to the foothills of the mountain where this little home base kind of thing is, where you jump on the tram to ride up to the top. And you do, you ride. It's like 2 miles straight to the peak. And you go up on this tram ride, you land at the top, and you can walk around, go in the restaurant. Well, by then, our reservation had been lost, and they said, we can get you in another 10 minutes, maybe 20 minutes, but you're going to have to wait a little bit. And so we were frustrated. I was, and I said, okay, we'll wait. We walked around. By that time, it had stopped raining. And off in the distance, just over the mountain, was a rainbow. And there was a gentleman there who offered to take our picture. And so there's our picture with the tram behind us and the rainbow kind of arching over it, this watermelon red mountain, because it was in the evening time. It was a picture we would have never gotten had the plans worked out. It's our favorite picture. It might not be easy, but if you try, I have learned there is always something to be grateful for. It could be a picture. It could be a broken piece of pottery with which to scrape the sores. But if you try, you will find something. You see, you can't control the situation. We can't stop hardship from coming. It's a sinful world. It's going to happen. And it's going to get worse. And it will continue to get worse as long as the Lord tarries before he returns to retrieve his church. We will continue to live in a world with bad stuff. And bad stuff will continue to happen to good people. We can't stop that. We can't control that. We can't control the affliction, but we can control the reaction. And if you're intentional about it, you can choose to be thankful even in the midst of hardship.
You've been listening to Light the Way with Dr. Colin Munger, the senior pastor of Shepherd of the Hills Church. If you'd like to hear this message again, stop by our website at lightthewayradio.org. Not only will you find an archive of Pastor Colin's teachings there to listen to, but there you can find out more about our ministry. Jesus said, "You are the light of the world," and we want everything we do and say to revolve around that. If you'd like to get behind what we're doing, please visit lightthewayradio.org and learn how you can become a light partner. When you do so today, we'll say thanks by sending you a free copy of Pastor Colin's book, Meet Jesus. In this book, you'll discover 7 miracles of Jesus and the 7 I Am statements he gave in the Gospel of John. All of it was done so we would have a better understanding of him as God. Again, to become a light partner or just receive more information, log on to lightthewayradio.org. Thank you for listening today, and come back next week as Dr. Colin Munger once again delivers another helpful message from God's Word to help us light the way. In the meantime, remember to be a light to someone this week.